Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notescene@gmail.com. So much to talk about this week. Big news from May Day Parade and Taking Back Sunday. But first, we're going to talk about rising emo scene rapper Nothing Nowhere and his debut major label album. Let's go. Looks like we are getting new Ariana Grande Friday. Are you pumped?
I'm sure as hell pumped, man. Do you think she could top Side to Side?
Oh yeah, totally, dude. I don't even think that's one of her best songs.
Really? All right. We're gonna
Yeah.
have to see. I'm excited.
Yeah, she's gonna come with the heat, I think, though. I think it's gonna be a big one. All right, let's do some listener questions. Our first question comes in from listener Thomas A, who writes into notescene@gmail.com. Thomas says, "How come you guys haven't covered the Wonder Years? Going all the way back to the brand new style marketing of sending out mysterious 7 inches, the secret coordinates on Google Maps to get a password, to watch a trailer, etc. This is all good stuff you never covered. Talk about the Wonder Years." So, our bad. Like,
Yes.
it's like the band's new album, Sister Cities, just came out. And to the band's credit, they had a huge first week. What did they sell, Tyler? Like 21,000 copies?
21,000 traditional.
Was it like, what, 22 with streaming?
Oh, yeah. It was
Yeah.
maybe 1K increase with streaming.
So, it's like we just kind of never got around to talking about it. And, coming off of No Closer to Heaven, that record was like a, was there's a lot of hype with that record. And so much so that, like, we put the band on the cover at EP. And giving up like the Wonder Years a cover is kind of risky because just putting a dude like Soupy on the cover of a magazine, a dude who looks like him, it's not necessarily your best shot at selling a magazine. Unfortunately, people want to see pretty striking images. And we just got a bunch of regular dudes on the cover of a magazine. It doesn't really move. It's not the best thing.
No,
And
doesn't sell.
but that's how much we believed, and that's how big the hype was. We gave the Wonder Years a cover for that album. That album ultimately, it was kind of a disappointment. And I think I personally had just kind of written the band off after that. Like I thought, I did not see this kind of a comeback coming, and I didn't really see any hype about this new album anywhere.
I saw a
None of
lot
my
of
friends were talking
backlash.
about it. Yeah, none of my friends were talking about it, but. Shouts to them. They come out of nowhere and they pull off a huge first week, 21,000 copies. That's nothing to fuck with. Like, they're kind of like, hey, we're still kind of on top in a way.
I mean, they outsold, you name it. They pretty much outsold them, man. Of Mice and
I mean,
Men, Sleeping with Sirens, you name the I Prevail. I mean, they just outsold them. How much? So my question here is, how much do you think Hopeless Double Count on the vinyl?
I don't know if it's so much the vinyl double count here that matters. Like, I feel like the reason we weren't seeing hype for this record is because I think the Wonder Years have gotten to that point now where maybe sort of like the Menzingers, like they just have their own fan base now
Okay.
and they're very insular. And I think that's kind of what happened here. Like, there was so much hype around The Greatest Generation and stuff because that was
Right.
such a good pop punk album. The pop punk community was swarming around it. But you didn't see that for this record. I think the Wonder Years just have their core legit diehards like Brand New do, and they're just gonna show out for them. And this band is, carving themselves out a career. That said, I really fucking hate this record. Holy shit.
I can't stand it. There wasn't one redeemable track on here for me. But I guess so my follow-up question is, or maybe more so of just a statement about the Wonder Years as a whole, they're not growing anymore, right?
No, I think they've found their sort of their lane. They've
Right.
carved out a
Exactly.
sustainable lane, it looks like. They've got that core loyal fan base that is going to carry them. Yeah, they're not growing. It's like The Greatest Generation is like my favorite Wonder Years record, and I just think they're really good at making that kind of pop punk music. I don't think they're good at making this sad indie rock. It's not that I think they should have to make pop punk. It's just that I think it's what they're good at. If they were good at making this sad emo rock, I'd be all about it. But they're just not good at making this kind of music. And that's why I don't like the record. It's like a 4.75 3.5 out of 10 for me.
Holy shit.
Like, it's a hard fucking listen. There's only one song I like on it, and that's We Look Like Light, which is actually a pretty good song.
God,
the only song I like.
So, if you give it underneath, you gave the Sleeping with Sirens album a fucking 4.
Oh, I'll listen to that. I'll listen to fucking, I'll listen to Gossip all day over this record.
Get the fuck out of here, man. This is not Sleeping with Sirens
this
bad.
Dude, this is worse. This is so hard to get through, man. It's one song all the way through. Like, you know what I mean?
Agreed, but at least it's actually listenable. That Sleeping with Sirens album is unlistenable.
There are some fun moments on that. There are at least some moments on that album that wake. We're not going to turn this into a fucking sleeping album. The album we've been arguing about for like 6 months now. But,
I'm in between a 4.5 and a 5.
Yeah, pretty awful listen to get.
But if you like this album, we're happy for you.
Yeah, very happy for you. Happy for the band. And you know, it wasn't like we were writing this band off because we didn't like music anymore. We just didn't see the hype. So, now that we're aware that this band kind of is more viable than we thought they were, they're kind of still on top in their little sphere. We will definitely be keeping more of an eye on them from going forward.
Absolutely.
Our next bit of feedback comes from listener Amanda R. Amanda writes, I am following up on your comments on the new 5 Seconds of Summer music. I have an issue with the comparison of their first album to their new music. When they first came out, they were riding on the publicity they got from being associated and touring with One Direction. They are now trying to find their own identity as a band without the popularity they gained from One Direction fandom. While I do feel they are trying to sound a lot like Maroon 5, I think Want You Back is a good pop song. Their newest song, Young Blood, is another good pop jam. Perfect for the summer. Anyways, love the podcast. Keep up the good work. It's funny, like, did we really go after 5 Seconds of Summer that hard when we talked about Want You Back? I don't think we did.
Not too hard.
You know, like, I don't listen. You know, this band, they were characters, and they tried to make a rock album. They took their shot, and they kind of blew it. And I don't really think what you see here is a band trying to carve out their own identity so much as the record label and the producers have taken over here and now are transitioning the band into a Spotify-friendly EDM popcore band. That's all that's really happening. The band are no longer seemingly in control of their music, and I don't think they necessarily want to be. You know, they saw that She's Kind of Hot, well, that was a fun song. That whole record cycle didn't really work for them. And now they're trying to make Spotify pop, essentially. And I actually really do like Want You Back. I think it's a really good pop song. I've come around on it. And if we get a chance to, we will talk about Young Blood later in the episode.
Definitely. Yeah. So they're going through a pivot. And that's really what we kind of based all of our Five Sauce talks around so far on the show in 2018, is that this band isn't going to be a pop punk band anymore. They're going to be a pop band. Like, that's where they're at right now. And I totally agree with you. Like, I have honestly come around on Want You Back a lot more than... I like it now a lot more than I did when it first came out.
Yeah. It's still a good dark pop jam.
For sure. It's still... The intro... I can't get over the intro. They're ripping off the Logic song so much right there.
Who's ripping off the 21 Pilots song?
Who's ripping off the... Right, exactly. The domino effect. And I get like pretty strong 1975 vibes from it, but it is a solid song.
It's at number 24 on pop radio right now.
Which is like, more than they did on their last album. So
yeah, this is their biggest hit since... and I actually hear on the radio it's their biggest hit since She Looks So Perfect. So it's working for them. I wouldn't like give this band any kind of like authenticity credit here. they are a vessel at this point. You know, they are a vessel and a platform that producers and a record label is trying to push music through. Exactly. These guys did not learn how to write this kind of music. You know what I mean? This isn't like stylistic choice. This is something that is very planned and orchestrated.
Totally. I do hope we get to talk about their new song, because spoiler alert, I'm kind of about it.
All right. Tasha Sharp. Well, we thank Amanda and Thomas for writing in. If you have any questions, feel free to send them in to notescene@gmail.com, and we will happily discuss them on the show. But we got to move on, Tyler Sharp, and we got to get to our main story this week, which is the emo rapper Nothing Nowhere. He released his new album Ruiner, which is out on Fueled by Ramen. This is his first major label album, kind of. This follows Reaper, which came out on EVR with a little help from Pete's label, right? Pete Wentz's DCD2 label.
Yep.
And then before that, he released Bummer, which was, that was independently released, right?
Yeah, he released a ton of music independently before Reaper.
So, you know, he kind of came on our radar, like, well, Tyler put me on to him, actually. But he signed Equal Vision Records, and that was kind of like his introduction into our music scene. And got a lot of hype. He had a pretty good A&R backing him, and now he's since then signed to Fueled by Ramen, you know, huge label. He's gained a big following. He's got over 600,000 Spotify followers in like less than a year, which is fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening. He had a profile in the New York Times, which that's a really big fucking deal for anyone from this scene. Like, the only band I can think of from this scene that got wrote up in the New York Times is Paramore. You know, and they went full indie with the last record. So you got to kind of take that into consideration. They were on Nothing Nowhere was on the cover of Rock Sound magazine. Like, to get your own cover on a magazine, that's huge. Big label. It's happening. You know what I mean? The hype is there.
You can definitely feel it around Nothing Nowhere. And I think this album is very interesting. It's really interesting album.
Yeah.
And I feel like the upslope has been increased with it.
Yeah, and so before we get in the album, I just kind of want to go over like the backdrop of what we have going on here. Like, emo rap is sort of this thing that's been happening. It really kind of pioneered. I'd say Lil Peep was kind of the pioneer here and the brightest star. And Lil Peep's dead now. We recorded a tribute episode to him that I'd recommend you listen to if you have any curiosity in emo rap and Lil Peep. But you had people like Peep fusing emo music with rap, and it was just this amazing thing. And you have another rapper who's very problematic called XXXTentacion, who's also sort of, I'd say, the standard bearer of emo rap right now. And then you also have Lil Xan, who's kind of more of like a meme than he is an actual rapper, but also just in that emo rap camp. But what's interesting is these are XXX, Lil Peep, rest in peace, Lil Xan. These are emo rappers who are people coming from hip-hop into emo, right? Whereas Nothing Nowhere is the first case where you have like someone from emo coming into hip-hop. You know what I mean? It's like the reverse. He's coming from our scene into hip-hop.
He's been the only notable SoundCloud rapper to come from, like you said, the Warped Tour alternative press scene and go into SoundCloud rap, basically. You know, we just, for whatever reason, we haven't seen scene labels picking up SoundCloud rap artists. Equal Vision was the first one, which, again, shouts to their A&R for looking out. But I'm not sure if you and I talked about him on the show much last year, but we questioned it. We were not sure.
Oh, yeah.
We were not sold on Nothing Nowhere. It felt very safe when he released two Lucy's last year. I think that it was Clarity and Kerosene and Hopes Up, I think, was the other single that they had out before Reaper dropped. But when he dropped the title track or the lead single from Reaper, I think it's called Scully, we were sold. Like, that,
yeah, we were sold at that point.
Shit bangs, and man.
To give you like perspective, like, emo rap, it sounds jokey to say, but like, it's fucking happening. Like,
it is.
Lil
what
Peep
it is,
was about
man.
Lil Peep was about to be one of the biggest stars in the world. He had backing from everyone, like Eminem's agent including. He had just massive backing. XXXTentacion, look up all his issues before you get into his music. He's allegedly done some terrible things, but he's like the third most streamed artist on Spotify consistently, right behind, you know, Post Malone, Drake, or you know, Cardi B. Switch them up at any given moment. XXX is right there as one of the most like streamed artists right there. Yeah, literally Sad. His lead single is called Sad. It's an emo rap song. So emo rap is happening. And Nothing Nowhere enters it at a very interesting time. And this is where we get, you know, his first major label album on Fueled by Ramen, which, you know, that was an interesting move, them sort of swiping him up. But Ruiner, Tyler Sharp, I guess let's just, like, in a nutshell, what are your feelings on the album? You know, and I'll tell you mine, and we'll just kind of go through this.
Ruiner feels like Nothing Nowhere's most cohesive effort front to back, and it really feels more low-key. Like, a lot of these songs are just low-key bangers, but you have songs like Hammer, which is the obvious hit, songs like Rejector, Fakener, to a lower extent Sayer and Ruiner. These songs are very low-key. They're not incredibly boastful in any type of way. Like the instrumentals and the beats and whatnot are very emo in nature. And then he either delivers his, he's like a chameleon. He has a lot of different approaches to vocal techniques. Yeah. He can rap, he can sing, he can go into a bunch of different zones. And I feel like that diversity, while also being incredibly cohesive, like I said, this album feels like his most coherent one front to back. And although there's misses, like I feel like Reminiscer, just that song kind of doesn't necessarily fit together, although I think the hook is great. Like it kind of feels separate from the rest of the song. I think this was exactly the step he needed to go in. And I'm a little disappointed that they didn't lead with Hammer, because when you listen to the record, it's so obvious that that's the hit. That was the secondary single that they released. But overall, I'm super happy with this record. Nothing Nowhere has got a bright as hell future, man.
So where are you at? What's your score on the record?
So I'm at an 8 out of 10.
Wow. 8 out of 10, banger status.
I was not expecting to be bagging Nothing Nowhere this hard. Like okay, last summer.
So I like this album to a point. I have a lot of problems with this record.
Really?
I find it very problematic. So yeah. So I want to start with the good things first about this record, just before I get into all of my issues with it, and we can kind of talk through it.
Okay.
You know, like when we first heard Nothing Nowhere and you showed them to me, I was like, this kind of just feels like Safe Space, like Lil Peep. Like that was my impression. Like this is like, it's like SoundCloud emo rap, but it's not dangerous enough. It's like kind of kids boppy in its own way. And that really turned me off to it. But when it really started to click for me was after the Feel by Ramen signing. I started thinking of it more as less Safe Space Lil Peep and more like Dangerous 21 Pilots. You know what I mean? This is kind of like a grittier, more underground emo rap thing for that maybe 21 Pilots fans can get into. It can kind of bring them down to that level. That was sort of that angle. Makes Nothing Nowhere much more interesting to me. Both Ruiner and Reaper are decent albums to me, but like they're not totally great. The case with his albums to me is like he usually only strikes gold on a few tracks. Like for me, you know, there's a lot that's unmemorable, and like Houdini and Scully are the two that on Reaper for me that just like really hit off. Like those two are my favorites. And Hammer and the title track, Ruiner and Reminiscer are the standouts to me on this record, whereas I don't think a lot of the songs on this album come close to what I think are the standouts. So that's sort of one of the issues I have, but I do like those songs, and I love the character of the Reaper that he's created, just the sort of world building he's doing. He's always referencing this like menacing character, the Reaper, that sort of haunts him, but at the same time there are times in his songs where he will own being the Reaper. You know what I mean? He will sort of swag out like he is the Reaper, which I think is really interesting, kind of like in a way admitting he is exactly what he hates. I think that's a really interesting duality he plays with this character, the Reaper. And I just love how sort of the interesting world building you got going on. He's like, he's almost there. Like he's definitely on to something, but something really rubbed me the wrong way about this record. And I'm going to try to like break it down.
Okay.
Like there's both a lyrical and a sonic sheen over this record. It's too glossy, like in both ways. Sonically, the songs sound too pretty to me. Like there's not enough chaos and distortion for what we kind of have come to know as emo rap. Like I think we need less guitars here, more beats, more experimentation. You know, like if you, some of these songs, dude, could be like emo revival records off Run for Cover bands.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? If not for the bars. And I think that kind of needs to be left behind. And so the sonics are, that's more my minor issue. My more major issue is lyrically. It's very glazed over and very vague while addressing like some serious issues like suicide and depression. And like, I don't, you know, it's hard to question an artist, but it really started to feel like it could possibly be like disingenuous and like illegitimate to me, like what he's talking about, you know? He's plagued by all these problems that he never really gets specific or gets into. Like on Reminiscer, which I think is a beautiful song, he's insane and he doesn't want to hurt anymore. But why? Like, why are you insane, man? Like, tell me something, fam. Tell me something fucked up you did. Like, he says, too late to save my sanity. literally, why? What have you done? You know what I mean? Like, what? Give me something. Give me some texture. Give me some color. On Better, he doesn't want to grow up. That's essentially like the summation of that song lyrically. And does this warrant the kind of theatrical depression he's masquerading under? You know, these are real problems people have. And I just think like coding that around something as simple as I don't want to grow up, you know, is a little, just a little suspect to me. Hammer, you know, that's a good song. I really enjoy it. That's obviously, like you said, the hit. But, you know, he was the nerd outcast and now he's flexing because he made it. A little bit cliche lyrically there.
I knew you were going to go there.
He says, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, he says, yeah, I did it all on my own, no promo. You didn't really do it on your own. You had a really good A&R. You know, you have really good label backing. Let's slow down there. You know, on Charger, he's thinking about his problems, which, not Charger, I'm sorry, Changer. On Changer, he's thinking about his problems. That's how we open the song. The problems which are never mentioned or elaborated on in any way in the song. Ruiner, which is a fucking great song. I love the vocal switch off between his highs, his lows, and like his haunting highs there. When he gets in that high level like of rapping, he has like this strange like serpentine delivery, kind of snaky, you know what I mean, when he gets high like that. And I really like that about the song, but it's you know, it's like he gets into this little cliche here. Just want to let you know I'm not alone. And who can relate? Like Logic? Like, are we going there? You know what I mean? Like, and
who can relate?
He drops suicidal thoughts in the song like a fashion statement. And I don't like that. So, you know, that's mostly lyrical issues. Another sonic issue I just have is he's gotten better about it. There's a couple times where he falls into that trap of overpronounced white boy rap core, like I'm a white rapper in case you didn't know, you know what I mean? And it's like, ah, you gotta tone that back, man. But yeah, man, I've been going off. Any responses?
So you know, to an extent I do agree with you on the vagueness, but I still feel like it is very self-aware. You know, he says in, I can't remember what song off the top of my head, I should have taken this as a note, but there's a lyric on the album where he says, you know, I talk about killing myself in every one of my songs and I don't want to do it. Like, why do I do that? You know? So I don't necessarily think he owes us a...
Yeah, but like on this album, he doesn't say he's going to kill himself in any song. So it's like, what? You know, again, with the vagueness, it's...
Yeah, but I don't
know.
Do
you really talk about that in your songs, man? Are you just saying that as a flexy lyric, you know, to look emo cool?
I mean, that's totally an angle you can approach the discussion at. But at the same time, someone who's depressed, you know, they don't owe anyone an explanation.
I do agree with that, but it's like, you know, there's just certain ways you don't owe it. But like Sonny Moore and From First to Last can write a song about his experience with rape and get it across why he's, you know, depressed. Like Ronnie Radke can write a whole album about drug addiction and get it across why he's depressed. You know, even Austin Carlisle can fucking write a song about his mom dying. You know, like there are ways you can get your message more across and close this distance between you and the fan lyrically, I feel like.
So do you think it's more so a strategic point to be that way, or is it the fact that he's just a young lyricist?
That's kind of the thing here. I'm not really sure, you know, like no substance abuse issues mentioned, no real traumatic events mentioned. There's like two curse words on the
album. Yeah, see, I don't necessarily agree with your angle on that.
All we have is that he doesn't want to grow up, and he had a bad breakup. That's all we can really pull away from this record. Like, that's it? Like, come on, Reaper. Like, put it on tape. Like, why are you so fucked up? Tell me what's wrong.
Yeah,
Tell me something you did that makes you feel like this terrible of a person that you have to coat yourself in this, like, tragic melody. I just don't get it. I don't want to accuse him of faking, but it makes you want to kind of question the intention and the legitimacy here.
I get it, because at the end of the day, he is selling a product and these songs are the product. But again, I got to stand by my statement that, you know, people who are depressed and people who are going through shit don't owe anyone an explanation.
I totally agree. I just worry that I don't want to see that sort of mode being used in a profiteering way, you know,
and I totally see that.
I feel like the artists who do it, you kind of know, like you don't get these little bells. And I got some alarm bells. Like I felt kind of ambushed. Like, dude, I gotta ask you, like, sir, just, this is gonna sound crazy, but I gotta ask and I gotta have it debunked. is this guy like low-key a fucking stealthy gospel rapper? And like, yo, and like, listen, like, no shots at gospel rap, all right? Like, shouts to Lecrae getting those number one, and shouts to Drake even, you know what I mean? But like, is there something like that going on here with this guy?
Did you really pick up like NF vibes? Are you just
is there something going on? Like, just tell me I'm crazy.
I think so. I didn't get any vibes like that. Okay. I think you may have been listening to a little bit too much of NF lately.
Yeah, I'm so sad. There's something that felt kind of sneaky and like a little bit of a trap on this record.
I didn't feel that at all. You know, I didn't dive too much into the thematics of it. I just kind of took it as it is, and I totally agree with you. There are some kind of immature moments on it, you know, living two lives, like my name's Danny Phantom, you know, like, okay.
I mean, yeah, that's fun though, you know, that's cute. But yeah, and ultimately to me, this is one thing. Like, this feels like he's writing this album about himself being such a mess, right? And falling apart. But to me, this album feels like it was written by someone who is very much not a mess and very in control. Like, it's so perfect and calculated, both sonically and lyrically.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up again. You know what I mean? I think I kind of like that it is a little different than your very abrasive SoundCloud rap. You know, it doesn't have the overdubbed bass lines or anything like that. It doesn't have a lot of distorted vocals in it, but I will say, you know, I love Waster. Waster is literally 2008 MySpace bedroom pop with those screams in the background. I fucking love that song. And he dropped this as a Lucy in between Reaper and Ruiner, and he didn't say that it was going to be on the album. So I was really glad he put it on there. But yeah, you're right. There's a sheen over the record, but I feel like it separates it from the rest of, you know, from being just a blatant Lil Peep ripoff, because there are some moments kind of like, I think it was in the chorus of Reminiscer, where he sounds a lot like Lil Peep. Like, there's some blatant moments where it's like, holy shit, like, this is really, really fucking close.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of glad that sonically it's separated a bit. I don't know if I want Nothing Nowhere to just live in that abrasive SoundCloud rap formula.
And not even just the sonics, though, just the mentality of putting this record feels so put together. This just doesn't seem like somebody who's falling apart. You know what I mean? The guiding hand here.
Right.
Feels
but
very,
we're.
Very
yeah,
calculated.
I know, man.
You know what I mean?
That's where I sort of get to the point where I just
I buy it. There's just a certain distance I feel from the lyrics here. And this is the type of album that, like, this will fucking bring you down. Like, for depressed people out there, this is a record that'll bring you down. And it's like, you got a question. Is it worth it? You know, if it's not legitimate. And gotta say, though, manipulative or not, you know, I don't know. Like Tyler says, we can never be sure. I like that it's a smart person at the helm with a clear direction. Like, that much is certain to me. This dude knows exactly what he's doing. And, you know, that's why I like this record.
Yeah,
the other day I was at a 7 out of 10, and I have since come up to a 7.5 out of 10.
That's pretty good for an album you got a lot of critique, man.
Yeah, it's problematic. Like I said, I like it, but it's fucking problematic for me.
Yeah, I just don't think...
If legit, 7.5 out of 10.
I just don't think... We or anyone is in any position to tell anyone else that they're not sad or they're not depressed. I totally get your side. You know, should he be selling that? I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt.
I got alarm bells, and you know, I've been dealing with this kind of music for a long time, so had to air it out.
That's interesting. You talk about like the sheen of the record. XXXTentacion's new single "Sad," which has just been blowing up, has no abrasiveness to it. That's where
that's a club banger.
Right, but I kind of feel like Nothing Nowhere is just like a step away from that, you know?
But I think lyrically, that song just cuts like a razor blade, you know what I mean?
Right, it cuts like a knife, and this is more like a butter knife commercial blade album.
Shouts to Butter Knife Core, all right?
Shouts to Butter Knife Core. But yeah, again, you know, like, he could be as vague as he want, I don't know. I feel like we're in the near future, we're going to get a lot more of Nothing Nowhere's actual narrative out there. He's going to be getting more coverage, going to be doing interviews. We're going to actually see some sort of character building in the future. And I will say, I love what he's doing with that kind of selfie pose with the hand over the face.
Sure.
You know, he just looks like your typical, you know, bathroom selfie taken millennial. And yeah. I think he's definitely nailing the image there. So I think the narrative is coming over.
Yeah,
the
that's
summer.
Great. I don't know if I buy the narrative. My industry plant alarm bells go off a little bit, and I just, you know, it's just.
I don't know. He's been releasing music. I mean, obviously he's got a fantastic team behind him, but he'd been releasing music for a long time before he got picked up.
And like I said, I'm not definitively saying like this is fake. Mm-hmm. I just say like I don't know. Like you know what I mean? Jury's out for me. First week sales, Tasha. What are you thinking for this record?
Man, it's not going to be high. It's not going to be high. This is still a very. He's still a lower level artist that has a lot of building ahead of him, but 2018 is going
to
be a really big year for him. And I think 2019.
To give you perspective, he only has 100,000 less Spotify listeners than the Wonder Years, who just plopped out a 22K.
Yeah, but they've got legacy behind them, man. They have their fan base. Nothing Nowhere doesn't have that yet. You know, he's building it to get there.
So where are you at?
Dude, I'm at like a 5,000 first week.
Okay.
Right around there? Maybe a little less.
I was around 6,000 to 7,000 first week, and then I just kind of, like, checked on some engagement. He's getting really big engagement, man, like, especially on, like, Instagram and stuff. So it just seems like I had to come up to 8,000. I'm at 8,000.
I mean, that'll be super. I'll be very impressed. So, I mean, the streams are building. This is just another bridge. And, you know, you got to shout out the release campaign. He just adopted the hip-hop paradigm, which, thank God, like, just throw the old rock paradigm of release an album, 2 years tour, release an album, 2 years tour. He's released two albums in a matter of, what, like 6 months?
Yeah.
And he's going to drop probably, you know, I don't know what they have planned for the rest of the year, but if they're smart, he's going to drop another one in the fall, and he'll drop a Lucy over the summer, and he'll just keep the ship rolling. Like, that's the new music industry right there.
Yeah.
So they're definitely doing it right. And like I said, I feel like we're going to get a lot of narrative building here over the near future. And I think 2019 and 2020 are going to be big years for this guy.
So I just ranted, you know, forever about my desire for more realness from this guy. Do you have anything else you got to add, Tyler Sharp, since I took up so much airspace there?
Yeah, really.
Got my feelings out.
I was not expecting that. No, I don't think so. I'm really excited for Nothing Nowhere's future. And I wasn't at this time last year.
Me too. No, and I like this record, and you know, it's got bangers on it, and ultimately that is what matters in the end.
Yep.
But we got to move on, Tyler, to our next story. Mayday Parade have signed with Rise Records, and they have left their longtime label Fearless Records. This for a new album. Did they announced a new album, right?
I don't think they announced the album yet.
I don't think they announced it, but I think
it's definitely assumed that it's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was in the press release.
Okay.
So I feel like we're in agreement here, Tyler, so I'm just going to come out and say it. Bad move.
I'm very interested to know what is going on at BMG's offices.
BMG, the major label owner of Rise Records.
Right.
The quote from the band signing was, "Rise has done a fantastic job with their projects." I gotta point out, Rise is fucking terrible for pop punk bands. They've killed them all. Polar Bear Club, Transit, Man Overboard, Knuckle Puck. You know what I mean? Like, even they kind of botched that at the drive-in, you know, comeback. Like, the Rise, they've kind of fucked up Paris, too, which was their shining star.
Yeah, they definitely did that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Rise has not had a good track record as of late, and historically has been a terrible place for pop punk bands. I don't like this move.
I just really want to know what's going on in the offices of BMG right now, because, like, so Rise as a whole, after it got bought up by BMG, and we talked about it a lot last year on the show, they went through this string of signing legacy bands. They signed fucking Acceptance, At the Drive-In, American Nightmare. There was a couple other bands that they brought on too. Just pure legacy bands. As soon as they put the videos up on their YouTube page, they all flopped. No one looked at them. I will say that the At the Drive-In album actually did like 14 or 15,000 first week, and I do enjoy a couple songs off that album. I felt like At the Drive-In fans would just enjoy that record.
It was here and gone, though, you know?
Like, yeah, I mean, it was definitely, there wasn't much longevity there. And now we see them pick up Bless the Fall, and now we see them pick up Mayday Parade. Are they just picking up the only bands left in the scene?
Well, Mayday, their last record, Black Lines. Oh my God. Like, don't even get me started on this fucking record. You know, like, you know, this was right. It's funny, 'cause this was during the new hype when brand, it was like, what, 2014, 2015, when like peak Brand New is coming back, maybe, we don't know hype, you know, and every, even though Brand New hadn't put out new music, all anyone was talking about was Brand New, and Mayday Parade decided at that moment they were going to make their Dark record. Now, like, the, nobody wanted a fucking Dark Mayday Parade record, but they decided to, and they paid hard. They saw a huge drop in sales. I think the record,
what did
before
that, do
that
first week?
Like 15 or I think maybe 14,000 first week, and the record before that had done like 33,000 first week, and it was like, so you know the band are going to pivot hard back to that old Mayday pop punk sound. You know what I mean? They're going to be happy Mayday. Nobody goes to Mayday shows for dark shit. You know what I mean? They're going to be pivoting hard back to that old sound. And Rise has just never pushed that kind of a sound.
They don't
have the audience for it.
Rise was never the neon label. When all the other labels were doing neon, Rise was just launching electronicore.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing.
And even this Rise, like, who are launching At the Drive-In and Accept It. Like, this is just, they're not, it's just, I don't know.
Right.
I don't think it's a good move. They should have probably stayed with Fearless.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're just on the downslope. There's no saving this band.
I mean,
you know?
At this point, it's like they still draw well at shows. People still care about the old stuff. They could kind of do what the Main did. You know what I mean? The Main have found their legitimate path to sort of, you know, sustained success.
I feel like Mayday needed their American Candy when the Main dropped their American Candy, you know, like they needed kind of their Leveler album like two cycles ago. And instead they've spent the last 2 years touring on a fucking, their first fucking EP for it. Who does a fucking 10 year tour for an EP, man?
Yeah. I mean, it's because the last record tanked so terribly.
I know, they needed money. So they did the EP and the first full length, and they did them both without Jason, as far as I'm aware. I don't think he was involved whatsoever in that. The only way to bring hype back to this band would be to get Jason back and just write Lesson in Romantics Part 2.
Yeah, I just...
And that's not going to happen.
I don't see Rise pulling it off. Any other thoughts here, T-Sharp?
I don't know. I see Mayday doing, like, what, 10K? Silver.
Whatever. All right, next story. Under Oath, following up from last week, Under Oath's new album Erase Me came out, and 30 Seconds to Mars America came out. And bam, Under Oath did about, what, 22,000 copies first week?
Yeah, 21 traditional, about 22 is streaming.
Okay, and 30 Seconds to Mars did 62,000 copies first week.
54 traditional.
54 traditional and 62 total SBS. So let's just start with 30 Seconds to Mars, get out of the way quickly. That's fucking huge. Like, okay, so not only did they, it would have been good if they stayed around Love, Lust, Faith, Dreams. They're back up to fucking This Is War numbers. Back in 60K, you know what I mean? Just as much success as you could ask for, I think, you know? And got a semi-decent streaming bump, you know, which you usually don't see from bands.
Super impressive. I was kind of expecting it just because of the hype from Walk on Water.
I was thinking more like 50, and I was going to call that a wrap and a victory, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, definitely, definitely. I wasn't expecting them to get close to This Is War again, because This Is War did 69. That was their biggest first week of their career.
Back up in the 60s again, it's like fucking... To see a band, a rock band, having increasing sales is just nutty.
Honestly, dude, like, I don't call them a rock band anymore. I know we can categorize them, but they're not. They are successfully pivoting to top 40
Walk on
EDM
Water
pop.
Is a rock song.
Dude, it's not a fucking
rock
song.
It's such
rock
a rock song.
Song.
Walk
no,
on Water
it's not.
Is
Get the fuck out of
a
here.
A rock song. That's a pure rock song.
It's not at all. Oh,
Rescue
my
Me
God.
Is a blend of EDM rock. You got guitars the whole fucking time. They're a rock band with half that fucking record. Best half is all rock.
Dude, oh my God.
They're blending EDM and rock.
They are pop U2. That's what 30 Seconds
they are not
Mars
pop
are.
U2.
They
are better than U2, and they're still making emo music.
Absolutely, they're better than U2, and yes, they're still making emo music, but it is not. You can't call this band a rock band anymore.
They got guitars everywhere, man. They're on all
that
rock radio.
That doesn't make you a rock band.
They're doing good at alt rock radio. They got guitars. Jared's singing. It's It's not like what Five Sauce has done. You know what I mean? They're still making. They got rock songs on their record.
No, man.
I'm just gonna disagree with you.
I don't think having guitars on your song makes you a rock band.
Dude, half the record is a rock record.
No, I don't think it is. I think you're so wrong.
But the song called Great Wide Open.
Dude, it's a fucking that's a worship song. That's not even like that shouldn't even be on the record. That's not they're not a rock band anymore. Right. But right. Semantics right. aside, congrats yeah. to 30 Seconds to Mars.
Hats the fuck off. Right. Like, I couldn't be more impressed.
And I'm pretty sure campaign. Side
and
note,
this is, you know, the band finally got off Virgin Records and they're on Interscope now. And you know, major label switches don't always go that well, and this looked like it just went fucking perfect. So shouts. Congratulations.
Quick sidebar. It looks like they're a duo now.
Oh, just Jared and Shannon?
Yeah, it's the Leto Bros, man.
Well, that's good, man. Like, you know,
one less guy they gotta pay.
The duo is kind of in vogue right now. So
I know. Are we looking at like the next the reputable chain smokers? Is that what 30
right?
Seconds
the
to Mars are coming?
The rock chain smokers. All right, Under Oath.
Shut the fuck up.
All right, Under Oath did 22,000 first week. That's a win.
Absolute win. I mean, they.
What did Disambiguation do?
24.
It's 24. So they stuck around their last record after being gone for 8 years plus. That is, you know, and not being gone 8 years, but 8 years last record. That's good. The next key component here is, you know, if you're a rock band and you can sell over 20,000 copies first week, you matter a lot right now mm-hmm. because those are hard to find. You know what I mean? So that just proves that, you know, Under Oath had success with this record. The other component, though, you need as a rock band like Under Oath is you need the single to stick. And that's what we're looking for next is the single Rapture going to stick or not?
Every day it either sticks, it either stays at what it was before on rock radio or it jumps up one or two spots. We're up to 27 right now. We were at 31 at this point last week. It's the first thing I check every single morning when I wake up.
So my guys in Escape the Fate blow right by it.
No, dude.
That's
fuck
3,000 copies for
shit.
Man.
Dude, get that out of here, man. They're at number 30 right now. They had that crazy bump, and they're still up 300% in plays from this point last week, but that thing's going to fall right off.
I'm still of the mind that Rapture is not going to make it. Like, I still haven't heard it on rock radio. I've been listening. It's still inactive. Rotation, you know, it's got to get into like the top 15, you know, before we're really going to start hearing it. And I don't know if it's going to make it. I think it's probably going to have to be the next single. They're probably going to push the next one. Yeah, I mean, you think you still are of the mind that this song has a chance?
I certainly have more confidence in Rapture than I do Wake Me.
Is that guaranteed to be the next single?
I mean, it that's what was on New Music Friday when the album dropped, you know, that's the other song on the record that they had. God, I can't remember his name. The Nashville rock radio songwriter.
No, Wake Me just almost fits better at rock radio than Rapture.
Like, it's such a bad song, man.
You know,
I don't know. I like that.
You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things.
It's more stock.
Kind of, it's more choppy and stock and like, you know.
I just think it's genuinely a bad song. And honestly, I know that it's just like recency bias and Stockholm syndrome, but like I sing along to Rapture whenever it comes on when I'm listening to the record. I don't know. There's
hate that song, man.
There's a vibe to it.
So
I think that hook is solid. My question for you
is Under Oath.
Okay, go ahead.
If Under Oath get one of these singles to stick, this will have been a big success. You know,
I mean,
you got the big first week,
and 10% justifies the next cycle.
Yeah. If you get one of these singles stick, whether it's Rapture or the next one, that means your record's going to start cooking. They're going to actually start selling more units in the first week. And it could be big for them. I'm still not totally there. I got to see some movement. You know, I got to see a single get in the top 15 or something.
So
but,
while we're on the topic of rock radio, have you heard the Fever 333 at all? Because the boys are up to number 18.
I have not heard them on rock
okay.
radio.
Okay, well, they are absolutely coming with that Roadrunner money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, because everybody thinks, you know, Rage Against the Machine. Yeah, everyone's like, oh, Rage got back together.
But
I didn't know it, you know?
The mid-2000s youth group kid in me that will always live on has to shout out the fact that there is Under Oath and an ex-member of the Chariot on rock radio rotation in 2018.
Yeah, it's cool.
Always
it's definitely
shouts.
Cool, yeah.
Shouts to Solid
yeah,
State
you know,
Records.
Rock radio, it's that kind of thing. So much of rock radio is taken up by like them replaying Nirvana
Right.
Metallica, Disturbed, and Papa Roach, that, like, there's only this small space for new music, and it's kind of like, you don't really get heard on rock radio much until you're in the top 10, you right. know? Like, once you're in the top 10, that's when you're in solid rotation. But, okay, we got to move on, Tyler. A bunch of music, you know, as this scene continues to fall from grace and consolidate with the times, a bunch of musicians got whacked this week, dude. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Taking Back Sunday, first off, split with founding member and guitarist Eddie Reyes. I think it's Reyes.
Yeah.
You know, the band, they didn't really elaborate at all on why he left. I saw some things floating around that, you know, maybe there were some problems with him, some of his own issues. I don't want to get too into it, you know, because I don't want to
right.
do the rumor mill thing because nothing's confirmed. But I heard some things around, and the band were pretty quiet, you know, regarding his departure.
Yeah.
But it's a bummer to see. You know, that was kind of the sell, you know, when Taking Back Sunday kind of came back with that Warner Brothers
right.
major label, sort of like that one, is it self-titled? It was kind of the sell, wasn't it? Original members are back.
Okay. Yeah. It is self-titled.
That was the one with,
what was New Again?
New Again was the one that everyone hated.
Right.
That came so after.
That was the one that came after that.
Yeah. Okay. Everyone hated that, but then they got the whole original band back together with John Nolan, you know, and so that was kind of like the sell of that self-titled record, was the original band back together. So it's kind of a bummer to see him leave.
Yeah, definitely. That him as just a person and as a face is just synonymous with Taking Back Sunday.
Face. And like, I'm in the nicest way possible, like him just like being like a shorter, like pudgier kind of guy in the band. Like, I always liked that.
Totally.
And, you know what I mean? Like, he just like, cause like he wasn't like every other skinny mm-hmm. emo boy fucking mm-hmm. out there in 2006. He gave the band kind of like, he was kind of a cool guy and like just gave the band kind of some character.
Identity.
Not having,
yeah,
you know, your typical little emo skinny boy with straight bangs. It was cool to see him in the band and, you know, but yeah, wish him the best with whatever's next. Okay. So next up to bat, Beartooth split with guitarist Taylor Lumley. He said he quit Beartooth to focus more on life and his art. And I think this is complete horseshit. total horseshit. Why would you leave Beartooth? First off, focus more on life and art when you're already making art in Beartooth. Why leave when you're at Cushy Red Bull Records, which is like one of the best record labels for a band to be on? The band is having more success than they've ever had. You know, new record selling really fucking good over the last one. And they've got singles at rock radio, and it's about to fucking happen again. You know what I mean? And Caleb, who owns the band, controls the band, is universally known as a very good and easy guy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think something, my speculation here is something definitely went wrong with Taylor. And this is not as clean and pretty as he puts it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely on that side. It, unfortunately, complete speculation, obviously, but I would assume that it comes down to money, especially when you have one guy that owns the whole band, you know, and the rest of the members are just kind of in the backdrop of things. And Beartooth is in that weird situation where it's obviously Caleb's band, but these other members have actually been permanent. Like, you have Ashi, if I'm pronouncing the name wrong, who was in like City Lights, and like him and Taylor have kind of become like synonymous with Beartooth.
Totally.
So I think it would, if I had to guess, it would come down to money. But obviously, you know, if he says that they're if it was his choice to quit, then, you know, we gotta leave it at that. But
yeah,
dude,
I mean, I just focus more on my life and art. You know, it's just
I mean, that's such a stock response.
And it's not
right.
Don't take these musicians at face value.
No, not at all. Never. But does that make Beartooth a three-piece?
You know, everybody's a three-piece now. Shave it down to a duo. Fuck it. You know, it's funny though. I don't think this will affect the band.
No, not at all.
It's the Caleb show. And this will have little no impact,
right?
In my opinion,
definitely.
Moving on. Next up, Fall in Reverse guitarist Christian Thompson left the band, and he straight up called it over irreconcilable differences, which I appreciate because that's basically saying like yo, we just don't get along and I'm out. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's no secret, Ronnie is an extremely difficult person to work with. He is the type of person that will go from 0 to 100 on you in 10 seconds. You know, 1 minute he's your best friend, the next minute he's your fucking enemy. Like, just working with people who've worked with him, being around the dude in the industry, there's a reason everyone's either left or being kicked out of his band. You know what I mean? And it's the Ronnie Radke show, ultimately. It doesn't matter, you know? They lost Jackie, who was, you know, arguably the most important member besides Ronnie, and that didn't even really fade, you know.
Right, totally. But this, so right off the bat, I thought this was the last other original member in the band, because I'm not completely familiar.
He was Jackie's replacement.
Right,
I don't
exactly.
Even think he's an official member. He might have just been another touring member.
Totally, totally. So what, this kind of, I just go back to what I said when they dropped that Lucy. In what was it, February or March? It, dude, phase the band out. We wouldn't even have to deal with any of this if they just phase the band out and make Ronnie Falling in Reverse, because that's what it is. So just focus on building Falling in Reverse as Ronnie Radke. Don't put the rest of the bands in the music videos. Don't include them in anything. Pay them as touring members. That's all you gotta fucking do.
Well, look, I mean, Ryan Seaman left, Jackie left. Fuck, God, there's just been so many departures. Mm-hmm. And even I was surprised when bassist Ron Ficarro left, because him and Ronnie were so tight. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That one just took me off. All right, he's coming. But like at this point, it's just Ronnie and Derek Jones. Those are the only OG members left, his rhythm guitarist, Derek. So, you know, how long does Derek last? Derek and Ron are so tight. I could never see Ronnie getting rid of him, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
But
Derek
it's
is
dwindled
definitely
down to one OG member.
Yeah, Derek is, again, like, Derek is
Derek
kind of
was in the
synonymous
band before Ronnie jail.
Right, exactly, dude. He's kind of synonymous. That face is kind of synonymous with Falling in Reverse. But, you know,
he's a cool dude, too.
Again, according to Falling in Reverse's Wikipedia page, permanent members in the band, there's three of them. So they're officially a trio now. And then they
who's
just
the
got
other, the drummer. That drummer guy's a replacement for Ryan Seaman, so it's like he's not even really a permanent member. So it's
they got Ronnie on lead vocals and piano, Derek on rhythm guitar, co-vocals, studio drums, synthesizer, electronic drums and samples, and Zach Sandler on bass and co-lead vocals since 2015.
Who are all these people? I don't know. Happen to block first. Quickly, if you look at the Used and their social media accounts and their website and stuff, Justin, formerly of Saison, the guitarist who replaced Quinn in the Used, is no longer listed anywhere. So it looks like Justin is out of the Used. Not much to talk about there, but just wanted to point that one out quickly while we're showing all of these band members who got whacked this
just
week.
Just another
holy
casualty.
What a
man.
Bloodbath. There's fucking Game of Thrones up in here. This
just
week.
Another casualty.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. Before we go, Tyler Sharp, we got to hit our pop story. Nicki Minaj, the queen of rap, is back. She dropped two new singles, Chun-Li, and is it Barbie Tings or Barbie Things?
Barbie Tings.
If I'm saying Tings, I want to make sure that I'm supposed to say Tings.
As far as I know, it's Tings.
All right. What do you think of these songs, Tyler Sharp?
I am not about them. It is not what Nicki needed to do. I assume right now they're just kind of throwing darts at the board. My main thing, the only thing I have written down in my notes is, where are the hooks? These hooks, right, if you could even call them that, are absolute garbage. I know these songs are just diss songs. Of course she was going to go after Cardi. Of course there's drama as soon as Nicki releases new music. Of course she drops it in the interview where she releases the new music at. I'm fucking over it. She need take me back to Super Bass. Take me back to Pink Friday. Do I think Cardi has longevity in her? As long as she keeps making the right moves, definitely. Mm. But Nicki, this is not what you need to be doing right now. I'm still waiting for the bangers. Where are you at with it, man?
So yeah, I agree with you. This is a terrible move. You know, what we needed from Nicki at this point, we needed the summer banger. You know, we need Super Bass or Starships or something, you know, and really what I want is I want Popstar Nick back. You know what I mean? Like, that Roman album was so fucking fantastic. Yep. Like, this weird blend of like almost rap meets Lady Gaga, you know what I mean? You even got the Red One shout out at the beginning of Starships. It was just like such a cool time when she was sort of dominating both rap and dance pop. And she's chose to come back, you know, and at a weird time. It's a bad move because right now is the time of Cardi B. And they're having their little drama, but, you know, Cardi just put out her debut album, which is all anyone's talking about. It's the biggest fucking time. And these Nicki songs come out, and instead of being just pop bangers, you know, like you said, they're just very straightforward, bare-bones rap tracks. And lyrically, it just feels, you know, she's boasting about, you know, being the best, being the queen, fuck all these other people. And it feels very defensive. You know, at a time when Cardi is rising, it feels like Nicki is being defensive and reactionary. You know what I mean? And it's almost like for a while there, because, you know, the Pink print is kind of where I fell off. The Anaconda video.
A lot of people
so did. So gimmicky. Mm-hmm. You know, it was almost like she got kind of comfortable and lazy. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I'll just put out an edgy Anaconda video. I'll do American Idol. And I'm a star and it doesn't matter anymore. And now that another female rapper is having her moment and is huge, now all of a sudden Nicki's like, oh shit, like I gotta do something. And like the Cardi album just came out. It did 255,000 copies first week. Nicki's last album did 244,000 copies first week. You know, right. And her sales have been on the decline since Pink Friday, which did 375,000 copies first week. So Cardi is winning right now. Like, Cardi's the queen of rap right now. There's just no question about it. Getting down to the songs, all this aside, I do like the songs as rap songs. You know what I mean? It's not what I want, but like, I think Chun-Li, do you know anything about the character Chun-Li?
No, I don't.
Okay, so Street Fighter was a big game when I was a kid, and Chun-Li was a character in Street Fighter. She's this gorgeous Japanese warrior princess type who, anytime I played the game, she could do this thing where she would jump upside down and do a helicopter kick, and it would fuck you up every fucking time. So okay. I think the song is Nicki kind of trying to say she's basically Chun-Li and she'll kick anyone's ass. But I think the song's good. It's catchy. It's hard.
I'm
about a 7 out of 10 on that one as a rap song.
Okay.
Barbie Tings. This one cooks really good on a big sound system. Again, it's not like the pop glorious Nicki we want, but I think it's a pretty good, like, hard battle rap anthem. I like it. And like, this is the kind of song, it's so hard and over the top, and I really like just the way the bass rumbles. I like the percussion. You almost got like that slapping percussion. It's almost like wood on wood when you hear those drums hitting. It's really effective as far as her bars go. And this is it's such a hard song. Like, you're going to see it. You're totally going to see it like the next, like, Amy Schumer or Melissa McCarthy, like, girl comedy movie. You know what I mean? Like the next Ghostbusters, for example. Like, you're going to hear this song play ironically as the Ghostbusters are all suiting up and getting their guns together. And there's going to be a slow-mo shot of them walking through the door while this song's playing in the background. That's what this song is going to be. And that's how it's going to ride. But I like it. I'm at a 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
Very disappointed. But still, I like the songs as rap songs.
My main takeaway is that we know Nicki has bars. We didn't need these songs to prove that.
Of course.
And I just don't think there's any longevity here.
No, I agree with you. Like, she's not even in the top 20 or anything on Spotify right now.
It hasn't made much of a dent. They debuted at, like, 85 and 93 on the Hot 100 chart. It's just not what she needed to do.
When Cardi is as big as she's ever been, you know, you gotta have bangers. And she chose to come out with rap songs. And that's why I'm just judging them as rap songs from a random rapper. You know what I mean? I'm not really, you can't judge them as Nicki because this isn't Nicki's fullest potential. It's sad, man. I miss, you know, I think Super Bass is one of the best songs ever written.
Right, right.
And I miss that era. You know what I mean? I want it back.
It was fun. It was fun.
Did you hear her collaboration with Young Thug? Anybody?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so she dropped at the same time, weird move, she dropped a collaboration with Young Thug, who is like the heir apparent to Lil Wayne. So if you're into Lil Wayne, you'll like Young Thug. I really fucking loved it. It's really,
really?
Good. Yeah, if you've liked any of Young Thug's music, you'll be all about this. Nicki's verse is really good. Young Thug just kills it. His lyric on the song is, I never kill anybody, but I got something to do with that body. Like, it's really, he really kind of goes there in a way. I think it's a great song. It's an 8 out of 10 for me, so I'd recommend it.
Wow. All right. Well, I'm still looking forward to the cycle for Nicki, and literally all it takes is one banger, and she's right back in the game. You know,
I just feel like she's stunted herself.
She's absolutely stunted herself. Like she fell off hard with doing all those features and stuff. And these two songs were absolutely the wrong move. But I feel like if she could drop a Spotify core banger, I feel like she might. You know, if she could get momentum on Spotify, she's right back in the game, man.
Right. You know, it's like Cardi with Bodak Yellow, which is a really hard song, and it's kind of like, is Nicki trying to do that with Barbie Tings, like make her blow up with a really hard song? But you know, that Cardi thing, that was just lightning in a bottle, you know.
You
need a pop banger, I think, and it feels like she's stunted herself here permanently. I don't know, you know, because the, like you said on the last cycle, after Remy Ma attacked her, her response to that and all those singles just didn't really, you know, nobody, it just didn't
There's
really
no
care.
Longevity.
The
yeah,
last
yeah,
few
yeah.
years, all Nicki's been rapping about is how good she is, you right. know, and it's like, and show us how good you are. You
right.
know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, we already knew you were good. Like, it's been a tough as a fan.
Yeah, definitely. And she had the Ariana moment, you know, with Side to Side, but that was definitely Ariana's moment, not
Ariana's
Nicki.
Moment, yeah.
Right. So I'm still holding out hope that we could have a few bangers here, but I'm definitely on the cynical side here that I think Nicki might be
it
done.
It just seems like the momentum is moving away from her.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's tough because you don't want to be like, oh, there can only be one.
Not at all, right?
One female rap star. You wish there could be multiple, but these two are at each other's throats. You know what I mean?
That's the problem.
If you've watched, Cardi is shading the fuck out of Nicki in these interviews, and mm-hmm. Nicki straight up is calling Cardi out in the interviews. So it's like, we didn't ask for, nobody wanted this war. I didn't. We didn't ask
right,
for it. They're doing it, you know? And whether it's to sell records or not, it's not making Nicki look good right now. And Cardi is riding high. And we didn't really get to talk about Cardi last week, but I do like the Cardi record. I think it's okay. And she's set up really nice with that I Like It song with the Hispanic, like the Latin pop sort of thing. That if they push that as a single, like in the beginning of summer, that's going to be one of the songs of the summer.
Man, you really think so? I felt like there was a lot of filler on that Cardi record. I think she definitely delivered as much as she needed to. I think she definitely delivered as much as she needed to. But I felt like that album as a whole, like I was kind of at like between a 6.5 and a 7 altogether. The good tracks are great, but there's a lot of...
Yeah, that's kind
of
where I was. I felt like she had enough singles on there. And I think that I Like It, that Latin pop one, is just specifically set up to be a big summer hit.
I wish they just would have used the Ozuna feature, because I feel like that Latin pop track's way better than that one.
But what song is that?
She did a Lucy with a Latin pop artist called Ozuna, and she was featured on it, and it's, oh my gosh, it's so great.
Yeah. This I Like It song is about to go hard at summer parties.
I don't know, man. I don't really like it.
It's going to go off. I didn't like it at first either, but you could just tell it's going to go off. All and right. She's got some other single potentials on there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hope it
Here
grows.
We are, Nicki Minaj story, and we're talking about Cardi. We are the problem.
we are the problem.
All right. That is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, please go rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Give us those 5 stars, and we will love you. If you have any questions for the show, send them in to notescene@gmail.com. We will see you next week.